Following is Father Hardin's second lecture in his series of lectures on vocation formation. In this second lecture, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Religious Life as a Call to Holiness. Father Hardin.
It is imperative that at whatever stage religious formation have a correct understanding of what religious life is. This applies as much to the person being formed as to the one in charge of formation. Stands to reason. Unless people knew what the medical profession is, how could persons be prepared for it? And let me assure you, the medical profession knows exactly what it is and is very specific in its formation. The same with the legal profession. And, as a matter of fact, the same with any at all skilled employment. An accountant has to be trained. Imagine a teacher in accounting not knowing what accounting is. Or a secretary, or a bookkeeper, or a carpenter, or a plumber. There are, as you know, apprentices. In all these shall we call them professions. In any case, the need, and we can bring it down to the most prosaic level, say of painting, I mean a house painter, or a bricklayer, you don't just enter, quotes, the profession of bricklaying by saying I want to lay bricks. And the more sophisticated the employment, the more the training will be long, demanding, specific, and progressive, the four qualities of all formation, from plumbers to religious. So much so, we almost identify the importance of the profession by the length of time that, say, the person is required to go through whatever they call it, training, apprenticeship, we call it formation. All the while, however, those in medicine, law, or pharmacy, or in accounting, carpentry, and plumbing, must know clearly it's not just that those who are in charge of the profession know what their profession is. This must pass on and come into those who are training for that respective profession. We can hardly put into practice what we don't understand. So we return to the religious life. Unlike other professions or skills, however, religious life is not a merely human endeavor. It is divine. It is not a merely natural enterprise. It is supernatural. And it is not a product of merely rational reflection. It belongs to revelation. It is therefore, and these words I don't choose carefully, or casually, I choose them carefully. It is therefore a divine vocation, because practiced by the Son of God in human form, is hard enough to learn from human beings. How much more difficult to learn from God? It is God who is the one whose example we are to follow. It is secondly a supernatural vocation, because it cannot be practiced without grace. It's not a question of not becoming a religious without grace. You don't live the religious life. And as I found out in my 30 years in the priesthood, there are a lot of people who can seem to be living the religious life, and they give all the external evidence of that kind of a life, but they may be living their own construct of what they think religious life is supposed to be. And this thirdly, a revealed vocation, because it's a mystery that had to be disclosed by the Word of God. So then, we come back to where we started. And we're asking here, what is religious life? We answer the question in the title, and I will here briefly explain it as we finish this first of our three subjects for this morning's class, with a sense of guilt by not saying more about such an inexhaustible subject. What is religious life? By now we all have many descriptions. There are at least a good 100 valid descriptions of religious life. But one description, rather than definition, I prefer the word description, is basic to the rest. Religious life is a special call that God gives to certain people, inviting them to above ordinary holiness in the imitation of Christ. This is five parts, each one of which we will make a brief commentary on. And to get our bearings, this is a course in formation. Let's make sure as we start that we know what the people are being formed to. Formation for what? And the answer is formation for holiness. But notice, this is holiness in the religious life. And we either recognize the distinctiveness of this form of holiness and its means of attainment, or the people we are trying to form will not be formed for religious holiness. This holiness is first of all above ordinary. Those whom God calls to the religious life are, this is a presupposition, they are called to above ordinary holiness. You don't defend that statement. You don't argue with it. You either take it or leave it. And by now we know there are enough. We have left it. It is therefore to be above ordinary holiness. Second, it is possible only for those who have the grace. You don't aspire to any holiness without grace. And you surely don't aspire, with any prospect of achievement, to above ordinary holiness unless you have the grace. And the grace, the community doesn't give. The community does not give the grace. God gives the grace. All right? And he gives it to certain people, not to all. And as by now we know, he gives it to some very unlikely people, beginning with ourselves. Third, it is therefore a special call, which presumes special grace, implied in the term above ordinary. Or, as I prefer, it presumes a lifetime of special graces. A vocation to the religious life is not so much a grace as a constancy of graces from the time the call is received until the curtain call at the end of a person's life. Fourth, the call is the vocation, which means invitation. I trust we will say many things in the course of this course. The one thing we want to be very clear about, the word vocation means just what it says. It is something that God offers. It is, if you wish, a divine request. It is not coercive. It is not compulsive. And given that to which a person is called, there can be an understandable reluctance. You need to ask a person to walk uphill in downtown Manhattan, in New York, because of the energy crisis, and in general, to save money, there is a notice on the elevator to save current. Walk up one and go down two floors on foot. Human nature, being the same in New York, Chicago, or you name it, doesn't want to exert itself with their own means of will, a body exertion. Now, I never thought I'd use this comparison. It may be totally inappropriate. But think of the difference between going up in an elevator, say, to the top of the Empire State Building, and walking up. Who would want to walk up if he could have an elevator? Now, there are no elevators in the supernatural life. God gives us the invitation, and we look up, bored, Are you serious? Do you realize how high that is? You're still supposed to walk it? And I want to be clear that to have the grace is one thing, to respond to that grace is something else. Our vocation is having the grace. And whatever other mistake we make in formation, let's not make this one. Let's not make the mistake of believing that the person does not have the vocation because they don't have the willingness to respond to the vocation. Fifth, God therefore gives, and these are three synonyms, the call, the grace, the vocation. Theologically speaking, I cannot exaggerate the importance of seeing vocation as grace. That's God's side. But the person's called must heed the call in mental awareness. Or in Samuel's case, they've got to hear it. You don't respond unless a person is in a dream or psychotic to what is not a call. So the person therefore must first be aware of the fact that they have the grace, that they're being called, that they've been given a vocation. And this is no small part of formation. You may not appreciate it. You may wish God had chosen somebody else. But whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not, you've been called. You're kidding. As I told two young women from Dartmouth, came down and had a 4-hour automobile ride to Manhattan. Both seniors in college, both thought they had religious vocations. Two bright girls, typically American, and Dartmouth is not a citadel of, well, Catholic orthodoxy. And they were sitting on a sofa. I looked at them, said, looking at you, I can see you've been touched. You are either literally touched, you're out of your minds, or you've got a vocation. And he said, that's our conclusion too. Our friends tell us we're crazy. So maybe you are. Are we clear? But if you're not, you've got a vocation. So that a person first to discover that I'm normal, that I'm sane. Because there are certain manifestations of people who have vocations that are odd. They behave in ways that other people who don't have that call, who are not touched, they behave differently. So that's the first responsibility. They must recognize that they have been touched, that they've been called. Otherwise, they'll put it aside as, well, a silly, pious impulse. Second, they must, the first is with their minds. Secondly, they must, with their wills, respond to the grace. whatever, that will become a lifetime response to a lifetime of special graces. God doesn't call people just so they will hear their names. I like the episode, remember, on Easter Sunday morning, and Mary Magdalene stayed under the tomb, and finally Christ pronounced her name, Mary. You know what she wanted to do? She wanted to stay there. However we interpret the words, "Oh, why so I called your name," you've got work to do. You give her the job of informing the skeptical apostles that yes, he's risen. So the response would be no great problem. How many times, including myself, mother would call me as a youngster. She didn't have a strong voice, but I could hear it at quite some distance. "Johnny." "Yes, mother." "Well, that was not the purpose of the call." The purpose of the call is to do something. And that's the second responsibility. And by the way, the word responsibility comes from the verb respond. Now, you don't just say, "Yes, Lord." Say it again. And thirdly, that the hearts, which means the wills, of those who have been thus called, are ready to give themselves, and not just at the beginning. There's a certain romantic thrill, I suppose, I don't know what your experience is, about leaving home. When I left, I misread the directions for the militia. It said 6:30. I thought it was 6:30 a.m. I was supposed to show up in the militia. Well, I wasn't going to get there 15 minutes earlier. So I took the midnight train to Cincinnati from Cleveland. I showed up around 6 o'clock in the morning. Community, still in meditation. I thought to myself, what a strange novitiate, nobody's around. At any rate, I found out that the romanticism wears off soon. This willingness to give oneself must have three qualities. It must be ready and willing. It must be eager, and it must be constant. No one who is called by God to the will of his life is ever given a vocation in order to have periodic vacation from the religious life. Not even 15 minutes in 50 years. It's constant.
This concludes Father Hardin's lecture on the subject, Religious Life as a Call to Holiness.